Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Fuel your day with Green Fern's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to you, Jenny Green, for entertaining us this afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 16th of November, and this is Game On. Coming up today, well, we know we're not going to the World Cup in Qatar, but who is? Mark Langdon will bring us up to speed.
Mancini's team not good enough. Northern Ireland close to winning it, but Bonucci and co, having celebrated wildly at Wembley with that Euro win, are still not sure of their place in Qatar next winter.
Olympic gold medalist Kelly Harrington will tell us about life after Tokyo and watching her medal fight this Christmas.
No, I haven't watched it once, but I definitely will watch it over the Christmas. When I do watch it back, it will be amazing. Like, it's just going to be fantastic.
We'll also hear about the startling levels of racism in English cricket, plus the rest of today's sports news. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
So what is the state of the nation, Marie? Will we be going to matches? Is Micheál Martin locking the whole place down? What's happening? Any updates there? I know you're looking at screens all around you, so
I'm looking
what's
at screens,
going on?
But I can't hear anything because I'm talking to you, Ruby, but I will hopefully get some notes put on my screen very, very shortly as to what, if any, sports restrictions they are. But just given the weekend that we've had, Ruby, and just the last few weeks as well, we've had such a brilliant time. We had a full house at DiViva Stadium for the Portugal game. We had a full house at DiViva Stadium for the All Blacks game. And they were just two brilliant, brilliant occasions. Great games. The atmosphere was super. Everybody was enjoying life, being out and about. So much more to come as well, just from like a club championship point of view as well. We have the women's games coming up next week. And you would hope that, for races too, of course, that there is not going to be any restrictions put on crowds.
Yeah, you would. You just think about it, though. You look at the restrictions, 5 days at home before, say, restricting your movements even if you're a close contact. So when your family has COVID or test positive, you just wonder about the knock-on effects on teams, even jockeys, players. It's just all starting, that wheel is starting to turn back in the wrong direction, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But look, I know there's a lot of split opinions about the restrictions and all the rest, so we can only hope they're doing what's best for public health and all the rest. But at the same time, it would be really disappointing if we were to take a step backwards when it comes to attendances at games. And obviously, that's just a really selfish opinion, because I did enjoy myself over the last few weeks. But I think an awful lot of people enjoy themselves as well. And I would like to still be going to games over the next few weeks.
They surely would, Marie. A big retirement in rugby. Ciara Griffin has announced her retirement from the Irish international rugby team after this Saturday's meeting with Japan. Look, she was the captain. Adam Greig spoke glowingly about her today, and she was a huge part of that team.
Absolutely huge part of the team, and it's quite striking that she's only 27 years of age. She spoke to the media there at 5:30, so we might get a clip of her later on, but she said that she wants to now focus on her family, that she's given rugby her whole life, which she has. She's going to make her 41st appearance for Ireland on Saturday against Japan, and she made her debut in 2016. But she really has been a leader, and Irish rugby needed leaders like her through the last few years when times were really tough. And any time she was asked to front up to the media or to give her opinion, she always did. And she's going to be an absolutely huge loss. You'd imagine that there's going to be a lot more to follow her footsteps. I was at the USA game last Friday night, and it appeared anyway that Lindsay Peat has also finished up playing for Ireland. It hasn't fully been confirmed, but you'd expect it to be so done in the next couple of days or so, that we get an official announcement on it. It's just disappointing to see players coming to the end of their careers. Lindsay, though, is in her early 40s now, so that's expected. But a 27-year-old departing the scene, you would wonder why, and if there was better structures and supports in place for the Irish women's rugby team, would she be finishing up at just 27? It's quite interesting that today was revealed as well that the reviews that have been done into women's rugby, they're not going to be made public, just the key points are going to be published. Look, that has been the case always with reviews, but given the serious situation that women's rugby is and the cloud that's hanging over it at the moment, it was expected in many parts that maybe the RFU would do something different and make those reviews public, but they're not going to do it. And I just think until there is full transparency, you're still going to keep losing big players, and you're still going to find it difficult to make improvements and move the game in the right direction. So look, it's more bad news really when you do think that you're losing somebody like the current Irish captain Ciara Griffin at just 27 years of age.
Well, that was the question I was going to ask you. Was it about structures? But you answered all the questions I had before I even got to ask one. Also out in the press today was Rory McIlroy. He was speaking before his last appearance in the European Tour this year, and I think we listened to what he had to say.
It's been good. I feel like it's been a year of exploration, learning. You know, there's been some good parts. Obviously, the couple wins in the States were nice. I was tied for the lead with 9 holes to go of a major championship at the US Open. There's been some good stuff in there. I've worked hard. You know, I've learned a few things, and you know, I feel like I've sort of went through that sort of barrier of struggle, if you will, and then I've sort of came through the other side of it. And so, it has. It's been an interesting year. I certainly don't regret any of it. Happy to be here. Happy to feel like my game's in good shape. And you know, as you said, it's, you know, play here, play Tigers event in the Bahamas in a couple of weeks' time. And I feel like I'm playing well. I've got some nice confidence from the win in Vegas. So try to finish the year on a high.
Rory McIlroy there speaking quite positively about the year just gone, Ruby. And I always think when you're in individual sports, you probably do have to put your best front forward as much as possible. But he does seem quite positive there.
He does, but when you listen to him, he's upbeat and he's positive. But you kind of get the feeling, listen to him, that he really can't wait for next year. Barrier of struggle and an interesting year. And there were some highlights, sharing lead with 9 to play in the US Open when you're already an Open champion or a major winner even, is hardly a highlight. But
what's the equivalent to that in racing?
I've been in front at the top of the hill in Cheltenham. Miles in the winning post. It was an up and down year for Rory McIlroy. He's finished it on a high, as he said himself, that with that win in Las Vegas. But I'd say when you have the talent he has, he won't look back on 2021 as one of the highlights of his career, I doubt.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I tend to think about this a lot when I'm thinking of people's careers. On my podcast, We Become Heroes, I have a new episode with Nicky Daly out today, but one that sticks with me all the time is Colm Cooper, and I asked him, one of the questions is, what's your greatest success? And he says to me, it's fulfilling his potential. And there's so many people who actually do get to fulfill their potential, and it must be a great position to be in that you can reflect on your career and think, I achieved everything that I could possibly achieve and hit that marker of fulfilling potential.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, Rory could probably say that too. You often wonder at times, did he fulfill his potential at a very young age? I mean, it's all repeat now, really, for him. And it's winning the same events over and over again. So it probably is to find that little bit of hunger, that wickedness or that evilness even that top sports people have to have.
Well, you definitely have it anyway.
Cheers, Marie.
Right, let us turn our attention to football because Mark Langdon is standing by. We are looking ahead to the Qatar World Cup, which is going to come around pretty quickly, Mark Langdon. And there's plenty of teams getting there, but there are plenty of teams who are finding it quite difficult. And Italy was one of those teams against Northern Ireland last night, in which was a very entertaining game.
Yeah, it was a fantastic game. You know, Northern Ireland, I think, by the end of it, fully deserved their draw. Italy, not for the first time in this qualifying campaign, sort of struggled to create and then when they did create, to make the most of the chances that they did. I think there's been a little bit of a Euros hangover, and I think that it's understandable. You know, you've reached that high. Usually there is at least a little bit of a lull, but of course, because it was in an odd number year, they were straight back into World Cup qualifying. There have been some average results. There were missed penalties in both matches against Switzerland from Jorginho that could prove to be very costly if they don't come through the playoffs. I sort of tend to think that they'll be able to, you know, there's a big break now, isn't there, until March, until the playoffs. I feel like they'll be able to kind of, you know, refocus their minds on what they've got to do. But there will be in the back of the minds of some of those players, at least, what happened the last time they were in a World Cup playoff and that they managed to blow that one when they lost to Sweden. But the simple fact is that they just weren't good enough, I don't think, in that game at Windsor Park. Didn't create much. Up front has been the issue, really. They haven't got that sort of, you know, number nine that they can rely upon. Immobile was injured. They tried playing a false nine with Insigne through the middle. That didn't really work out. Chiesa was quite lively, but, you know, just not enough in the final third from Italy. And they find themselves in a sort of the same spot as Portugal, the last two European champions. They can't meet in the sort of semi-final of the playoff because both of them will be seeded, and they'll be hoping they avoid each other in terms of sort of, you know, when it comes to the final as well. So can't play in the semis, but might yet play in the final.
So, Mark, Serbia, Spain, Switzerland, France, Belgium, Denmark, Croatia, England and Germany are definitely qualified, but there's one place left for the automatic qualifiers, and it's up for grabs between the Dutch, Turkey and Norway tonight.
Yeah, absolutely massive game tonight, particularly between Netherlands and Norway. Netherlands have already blown one big opportunity, 2-0 up against Montenegro at the weekend and didn't get that over the line, managed to concede a couple of late goals. They will still expect to win the game, or certainly not lose the game against Norway and secure their berth in the sort of finals in Qatar. The one thing, I suppose, against them is the fact that there won't be a crowd inside the stadium. I heard you speaking a little bit earlier there about, you know, restrictions coming back in. That's certainly the case in the Netherlands, so no crowd there for that game. I would say, though, that's not as big as the sort of problems for Norway, because they've got no Erling Haaland, and he is a big, big part of that team. So I would expect Netherlands to get over the line. In terms of sort of Norway, they've got Odegaard, who hasn't quite lived up to it, I don't think, at Arsenal this season. But one player to watch out for, Christian Torsvet. The surname may ring some bells for those that remember the Premier League sort of back in the early days. Erik Torsvet's son, the former Tottenham goalkeeper. He's having quite an interesting sort of last 18 months or so, I'd say, in Belgium. Looks like he's a player that's progressing nicely, more of a sort of attacker or attacking midfielder, whereas his dad was a goalkeeper. So if anybody's to kind of break Dutch hearts, it might be him. But I would have thought, even without a crowd, Holland should be okay and to, you know, be able to qualify for the finals alongside the, you know, all those countries you mentioned just there, Ruby.
So Wales are home tonight in Cardiff. They face Belgium. They need a point. The Belgians are already through, but they have no Gareth Bale, do they?
No, they don't. And what I'm expecting really is for Wales to just try to get that point to make sure that they're seeded for the playoff semi-finals. You know, that will be a big advantage to be able to have that one-legged game at home. Belgium haven't got sort of a host of players that themselves, so it's not sort of the full-strength Belgium. It's also a Belgium that lacks focus. And I think we've seen with the return of crowds just how that has helped sort of home teams. I certainly think that was the case, for Ireland against Portugal. It just feels like a different occasion. I'm sure it was the same for Northern Ireland against Italy. So the Welsh crowd will be up for it. I wouldn't be surprised if they got the point that they need. Just without Bale, you just wonder if they've got enough to go and win the game, but they don't need to do that. You know, it'll just be make sure you don't lose, get that home game for the semi-finals. Otherwise, you've got to play away in the semis in March, and, you know, in a one-legged game away from home, you wouldn't really be fancying Wales against any of the teams that are in sort of, you know, that they're likely to play. At home, it becomes a different story, I think.
Scotland have been really impressive, and crucially, they're going to be seeded for the playoffs after beating the Danes 2-0 at Hampden Park. But just a huge amount of excitement around this Scottish team.
Yeah, there is. And again, I think the, you know, playing at home in front of a crowd really helped them. It also helped, I suppose, that Denmark had qualified as well. But it was a really positive performance from Steve Clarke's side. They didn't really, I think, show their best at the Euros, particularly in their two home games against the Czechs and Croatia. But I think they've been steadily improving, you know, even reaching the Euros in the first place, been performing quite well in the Nations League. And this is just building upon that. And if you actually look at their squad, they've got a number of players now that are playing Premier League football, and you know, that's important. I think when they were sort of really struggling a few years ago, that wasn't the case, and it was the Championship, or you know, even in the Scottish Premiership, it maybe wasn't Celtic and Rangers players. So there's definitely been an improvement in those last couple of years, and absolutely right. And as I mentioned it with Wales, I think it will make all the difference. Being at home, not only have you got the easier tie because you're seeded, but to be at home in that semi-final, I think will be absolutely massive. You can just imagine what Hampden will be like, assuming it's allowed to be full, you know, for that game. You know, whoever they're playing, it would be absolutely fantastic. And looking at the teams that are sort of unseeded, I think Scotland at home will fancy their chances of at least reaching the final. Then, you know, you're relying on the draw. If you draw Italy away, then you're probably not going to win that one. But if they're at Hampden for both matches, yeah, it's going to be a horrible game for whoever has to go there, that's for sure.
It's hard to get really excited about the World Cup qualifying games when Ireland aren't in it. But at the same time, I know if they were there, that I'd be really, really interested in everything that's happening. Saw England last night beat San Marino 10-0. And in the aftermath of that, a conversation started up again. Michael Owen was probably the catalyst for a lot of it when he said that half of the games are pointless and a restructure is needed. Would you go as far as agreeing with Michael Owen? Do you think there are problems with the international football structures?
I think it was poorly timed on the night that the European champions were failing to qualify for the World Cup, to say that it's completely flawed. I think that San Marino are a different case to some of the other teams. I think we've seen, and you know, Luxembourg, for instance, would be a good example, that were complete minnows not that long ago. Now they've got players that are, you know, performing and scoring in the Champions League. Iceland, another, you know, complete minnow, then reached the quarterfinals of a Euros and knock England out in the last 16. It wasn't that long ago that Turkey, were getting absolutely thumped at Wembley, sort of, you know. So I think that for most nations, it's okay, because you do get better if you've got the funding. You're playing against better teams. I believe that most of them deserve to be there. I think, though, that San Marino have been in this position now for, 25, 30 years, and they're showing absolutely no signs of getting better. And I'm not sure what San Marino get out of getting beat, sort of, you know, and it's not always 10-0. But I wonder if there maybe is a pre-qualifying for maybe sort of, you know, three or four of the teams, just to thin it out a little bit, because the San Marino coach afterwards said that he was, you know, he's more excited really about the Nations League, because they're playing against teams at their level. And you know, I think that we've seen enough evidence now from San Marino to know that they're never ever going to get better. If they've got any players that are any good, they'll end up playing for Italy. And I just wonder sort of maybe what the point is of the, you know, the real sort of tiny teams that are there in qualifying. But I think in general, I'm sort of a believer in that these teams should be allowed to compete in the qualifying campaign, because it makes them better.
It's not that many months ago, Ireland would have loved the game against San Marino. But look, you have seven games tonight, and six of them matter. And the two that do matter as well are Finland and France. Obviously, that game is in Helsinki. But if France can beat Finland, it opens the door for the Ukraine against Bosnia and Herzegovina.
It does, yeah. I mean, Finland obviously, you know, really raised their levels to reach the last European Championship. I don't really enjoy their style of play, particularly. It's very direct, and it's maybe not the most attractive football. And I think if you look at it player for player, you know, Ukraine have got some really interesting sort of youngsters coming through. And I kind of feel like the World Cup would probably be better if Ukraine got there. But what you would say is that Finland absolutely sort of, you know, make the most of what they've got. And, some of the players like Pukki, for instance, just seems he's like a man possessed when he plays for Finland. And they got a massive result with 10 men in Bosnia in the sort of first batch of these qualifiers in this break. And they've given themselves an opportunity. They'll be hoping that France are sort of not bothered And sometimes France can play like they're not bothered. But Kylian Mbappe was absolutely brilliant in their last game as well. They've got real big depth. If they're focused on the game, then France should win, and that opens it up for Ukraine. But I think if you do want to play one sort of big nation, maybe that have just got that inconsistent sort of part to them, it probably is France. They don't always focus on the job in hand, I think it's fair to say.
Qualification is ongoing in Africa as well, and South Africa are going to make a formal complaint about questionable decisions made by match officials in their defeat by Ghana on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've seen this penalty incident involving Daniel Amati, who plays for Leicester. I mean, you definitely file this one under the soft bracket. He's barely touched in terms of being pushed in the area. The referee gives a penalty that ultimately decides that South Africa won't go to the World Cup and Ghana go through to the next stage, which is the playoffs. South Africa are particularly upset because in qualifying for the last World Cup, they had to replay a game due to, what was perceived at the time, was it refereeing mistakes? It was actually match fixing involved, and, the referee was found guilty of match fixing, which is why they replayed the game. South Africa are saying that there's a precedent already set, but of course there isn't, because this referee has not been found guilty of match fixing. As far as we know, and and all the evidence that we've got, it was just an honest mistake, a terrible, terrible mistake that's cost them a spot, at the World Cup. But Ireland supporters will know all about the handball of Thierry Henry, and there was clamours then for maybe having a replay or something like that. It doesn't happen and it won't happen. It's absolutely gutting for South Africa because, like I said, it was an awful refereeing decision, but they're going to have to take it. They're not taking it at the moment, and they're refusing to go down quietly, but they can't use the kind of what happened against them in the last World Cup as a precedent being set, because, like I say, that referee was found guilty of match fixing for betting purposes. This is completely different.
Mark, what do you think about the fact that there's 40 nations in Africa trying to qualify for the World Cup, yet only 5 will get there? In Europe, there's 55 teams, 13 get to go. Do you think the Africans get a fair deal?
No, I don't think that they do. I think that they would look at, South America get 5, and that's probably about right. I think they would look at, that CONCACAF region where there are 3 automatic and 1 gets a playoff spot, the Mexico, USA, and at the moment it's Canada, and you get like Panama and teams like that. And that I think they've got every right to question and wonder why they haven't got what I would say on their ability, the right amount of numbers. I'm sure that if you look at sort of the TV figures and the money that's generated in Mexico and USA, I'm sure that FIFA would say that that there are reasons why teams in that region get I would say at least a fair deal. And Africa have always complained that they don't get a fair deal. And we've got a situation tonight where Cameroon are playing Ivory Coast. Loser goes out of the World Cup. Only one team, in terms of their 14 group, only one of them can go through. And then even if you finish top of the group, that's only to a playoff where you're in with the likes of Ghana, Algeria have just made it through, Nigeria. It's a really strong region. I feel like Africa should probably have a couple of more spots, but I'm sure that in South America they feel like that they should have a couple of more. I just wonder about the CONCACAF region. For all that there's improvement in Canada at the moment, it still feels like quite a lot to me. And we saw Panama at the last World Cup were really out of their depth as well. And some of those Caribbean islands haven't really delivered much when they've been in it either. So if I think Africa have got a very fair complaint to be made there that maybe that they could do with at least taking one of those spots.
See the argument. If you look at Oceania, they have no automatic qualifier. Whatever wins their group, like New Zealand, Fiji, Samoa, countries like that, goes into that intercontinental playoff. But the ratio in South Africa is 5 from 10 teams. In Asia, it's 5, maybe 6 from 12. The African ratio is completely distorted, let alone money, etc.
It absolutely is. And, you know, they also get, I would say, an unfair deal in terms of, you know, in terms of the African sort of Cup of Nations when they play that competition. And, you know, just about every club in Europe moans and, you know, tries to hold their players back from playing in sort of, you know, a really important tournament. So that there's no doubt that that they don't get, I think, a fair crack of the whip. I would say that I think African football has been disorganised, you know, at the top level and still is, and hasn't maybe got that influence inside FIFA that you need, you know, to really make a difference. And until they kind of sort that out, you know, I think they're always going to be on the wrong end of these kind of calls. You know, UEFA is very powerful, and I don't think there's a complaint to be had there. I think Europe gets, you know, the right amount of teams. I think South America gets the right amount because it's such a competitive sort of qualifying campaign. You look at that one, I mean, somebody like Uruguay are really struggling at the moment to qualify. They've got Suarez and Cavani and players like that. So I think that they're fine. Asia maybe gets one too many. I'm not sure about the quality that's coming out of Asia at the moment, but definitely that CONCACAF region, where, you know, Mexico, it's almost impossible for Mexico to fail to qualify, you know, with three automatic positions and only really them, USA, and then, you know, Canada improving. But, you know, it's difficult to get knocked out of that region's qualifying.
Mark, just before we finish up, if anyone is staying up late tonight, they will be treated to Argentina against Brazil. They will have Messi, but there will be no Neymar for Brazil.
No, Neymar injured again. He's injured quite a lot in the last few years. But interesting to see just how fit Messi is. He's been missing games for Paris, including Champions League. He sort of made a cameo in Argentina's last game. He's playing really well for Argentina at the moment. Him, Di Maria and Lo Celso at Spurs, who doesn't really play that great in the Premier League, but really turns it on for his country. He's been the one that's been supplying Argentina, who had definitely on their way back, that they've had a really good couple of years, should seal their qualification very soon for the World Cup, maybe even tonight.
Mark Dynan, thanks a million. Enda Brady from Sky News is going to join us after the break to discuss racism in English cricket.
With Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It is time to turn our attention to cricket, and there was some good news for Cricket Ireland today as Ireland were confirmed as co-hosts of the 2030 T20 World Cup along with England and Scotland. The 2030 version of the event will feature 16 international teams, with Ireland expected to stage games at Malahide and possibly Stormont in Belfast. 2030 feels like quite a long time away. Hopefully we won't be talking about COVID restrictions then, Ruby. It does seem like in the Taoiseach's address there was no sports specific news, so we will see what
crappy
that means.
Days. Let's keep it that way. Look, obviously we all have to be aware of public health, but anyway, I think we'll move on. We're not exactly experts on it, are we?
Yeah, we're going to stick with the cricket though, Ruby. Today, English cricket was really, really thrown into the spotlight. Former Yorkshire player Azeem Rafiq said that it is institutionally racist. Rafiq told a digital Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee that racist language was constantly used during his time at Yorkshire and that he had lost his career to racism. For more on this, we are joined by Enda Brady of Sky News. And it is a really, really shocking story and is making huge headlines over in the UK for very, very obvious reasons. Could you just bring us up to speed on the story and just how it's got to this stage?
So, Marie, this is pretty devastating testimony, really, from Azeem Rafiq in front of this parliamentary committee today. They asked him questions and they asked him about his first-hand experience of playing cricket for Yorkshire. So the county game over here is pretty much divided up much the same way as GAA is in Ireland. So it's a very high level. Obviously, he was a professional cricketer. He played for Yorkshire. He captained England under-19s. And he has laid bare a culture of racism really at the heart of the sport, and he pointed out some of the incidents, one particularly upsetting incident where he had just received word that his baby had no heartbeat, and he was trying to come to terms with this, and a senior official at Yorkshire County Cricket Club called Martin Moxon brought him into a room and ripped him to shreds. Those were the words, just after he'd been told that the baby had no heartbeat. So damning evidence, really, and a whole culture that really, I think a lot of people in cricket tonight will be staring long and hard at themselves in the mirror, because Azeem Rafiq has shone a light on everything that happened to him. He named names, he spoke of really horrible incidents, another incident where he was 15 years of age. He's a Pakistani-born Muslim, and he recounts being held down by a senior player. He was 15, and he had red wine poured down his throat. He was 15.
And obviously Azeem had parliamentary privilege, so he was able to really reveal a lot of detail, and it made for a lot of uncomfortable listening for a lot of people. What will the ECB do? Surely they have to take control here now and take it out of Yorkshire cricket's hands.
Yeah, absolutely, Ruby. I think, you know, we're at a situation now where the highest powers, the people who, the English and Wales Cricket Board, who govern the game, I think there will have to be a root and branch review of all aspects of the game. And I mean, shocking story after shocking story revealed by Rafiq today. He points out as well that the knock-on effect is that Asian representation in cricket is down 40% in this country since 2010. So quite clearly, his experiences have been mirrored elsewhere. And he said that he wouldn't want his own son going anywhere near cricket because of what he was subjected to. So I think in the coming days, you would imagine the ECB will come out and just take on board what has been said. You know, the one key thing here, 2.5 hours of evidence almost from Azeem Rafiq, nobody is disputing anything he has said. So it obviously all happened in all corners of the game. And he has relayed event after event. And ultimately, he believes the racism cost him his cricketing career. So a desperately sad day for the sport. Powerful, brave testimony from him, but ultimately tonight a sport reeling from this, and I think some very senior people in the game will be looking long and hard at themselves and their role in it.
Well, as you mentioned, and that is a really, really strong testimony from Rafiq today, let's hear some of what he had to say.
What's happened to me has happened. It'll never change. But my aim was to try and see if my experience can help others. Clearly, the word institutional is something no one wants to be associated. Institutional racism is something no one wants to be associated with. End of 2017, we had a really difficult pregnancy, and through that time, the treatment that I received from some of the club officials were inhuman. They weren't really bothered about the fact that I was at training one day and I get a phone call to say there's no heartbeat. Sorry.
You paint a terrible picture of life in the Yorkshire dressing room and around the club, perhaps particularly in your younger years. Why did you go back there after you left once?
To be honest, start of 2016, I started really well. I was training with Derbyshire. They didn't have the finances to offer me a contract, and I was in a position where putting food on the table was really difficult, and I genuinely had no other option but to go and try and fulfil not only my dream but my family's dream, and that's just the honest why I went back. But more importantly, I think I was in denial right up to 2017. And one thing I want to talk about is for a person of colour to actually start accepting that you're being treated differently because of your race, religion, is actually quite a tough thing to take. Because then you're always like, why? You just want answers, but you never get answers. And I think here, the ECB's got to take a bit of responsibility as well. It's all well and good, everyone throwing the book at Yorkshire. It is still my club.
Now, that was Azeem Rafiq speaking earlier to a Digital Culture, Media and Support Select Committee about racism in English cricket. Thank you to Enda Brady for joining us from Sky News. And if you've been affected by anything in Azeem's testimony, you can find support at rte.ie/support.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. As promised at the top of the show, earlier on we caught up with Olympic gold medalist and new Spa brand ambassador Kelly Harrington. Marie began by asking her how much her life has changed since Tokyo.
It hasn't actually really changed, to be very honest with you. People keep saying, oh, it's great, your life is going to change, your life will change forever. And I'm like, my life doesn't need to change. I'm very, very happy with the way my life is. My life hasn't changed, but what I do notice that people around me has changed, you know, but my life in general hasn't actually changed because I wouldn't allow it to, because I'm very happy and what I do, I'm happy doing. I don't need anything else. I just, you know, well, the few extra bob in the pocket doesn't go amiss, but I'm fairly happy.
And what about, like, you've just been recognised, Kelly, because like you're a big star now. You are, like, you're one of the most recognisable faces in the country. And I'd imagine that probably brings a little bit more kind of pressure and expectation, the fact that you're seen now as, I'm sure you always were, but even more so a leader and a role model.
Pressure is for tires. I think pressure is a privilege, and I'm in a very privileged position to be a role model to the next generation coming up, to people who are falling on hard times, knowing that they can get out of those hard times if they really want to. And I suppose I feel like I've always been a role model, and I carry myself in that way. I try not to let myself down in public. I try not to let myself down, really. And try and carry myself. Like, if you have a platform and if you can be a voice, then why not use it to be a good one, really, you know?
That is inspirational. But when you walk out your front door in the morning, are you just still Kelly, the girl that was walked out that door every morning before she won the Olympics? Have your own friends, family, community allowed you just to be you?
Yeah, they have, like, and that's the great thing. Like, so when I come home, for the first week when I come home, I was afraid to walk out my door because I wouldn't get down the road. Like, I was like, oh, I can't face people at the moment. I was so tired, I was so exhausted that I had to go through all the talk, the same thing over and over to every person, you know. I was like, corn twitching, I was like the flower pot looking out the window. But now it's become very normal and they just let you get on with your life and they'll all give you the wave and they'll all say, how's it going, love? How are you getting on? And the cars driving down Portland Road will be beeping at you and you're waving like there's, they're probably not even beeping at me, they're probably beeping at someone else and I'm there waving like a spare plank, like. But they've just leave you get to do what you're doing. And the kids from around, like from the schools now, they'd be just mesmerized. They're like, oh my God, there's Kelly Harrington. She lives in there. That's her car. And they're just like, I'd just be like laughing. It's absolute. I just can't believe like that it's me that they're actually talking about. I'm like, that's mad. Like, I just think it's absolutely bonkers.
But that sense of normality is nice to have because you do realize that you are on show and that you're never going to let yourself down in public. But to be able to be yourself in your own area is almost a sense of relief.
It is, because do you know what, Ruby? If you were anything else but yourself, people would be like, who does she think she is? You know, and the thing about it is, we all know a lot of people who have fame and who have money and stuff like that. And it does change people. Like, now the only thing is, I don't have bleed money. But like, it does change people. And they do forget where they come from and they forget their grassroots and they forget who helped them and the person up the road who might have dropped 50 quid into them 6 years ago for a pair of bloody boxing gloves, you know. They do tend to forget that, but I don't forget that. Like, and that's kind of, I think that's why people kind of like me, is because I don't forget all of that kind of stuff and because I don't forget where I was when I was a teenager and what I came through to get to where I am, you know, and they resonate with that. And they, some of them see, you know what, if she can do that, I can do that. And, you know, my child is going through a hard time, and if I don't give up on them, you know, anything is possible. So, yeah.
You're true to yourself, Kelly, and that comes across in every single interview that I do hear and see you doing as well. But in terms then of switching off and taking a break, and look, Ruby's on the call as well, and he's someone that fascinates me in terms of discipline, and maybe since retirement not letting himself go like I expected him to go. But did you get to take a break and switch off?
People can't see him, by the way, can they? They can't no. see how much he's let himself go, no?
Did you ask me to say that?
funny enough, now, I was putting on a suit going to Cheltenham the other day, and it just was a little bit snugger than I would have liked, so yeah, there's a bit of a day coming.
But sorry, I got lost then.
Do you take a break? Do you allow yourself to switch off and relax and just be in the moment, or are you constantly focused on the next goal?
No, Jesus, you take a break. You have to, you know, balance is key. Some days I'll stay in my pajamas for the whole day till the next day, you know, and sit on the chair and eat all around me, literally, like, and Mandy would be like, what is wrong with you? Like, you haven't stopped. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm enjoying myself. Now, that doesn't mean that I do be thinking then later on, oh my God, I shouldn't have done that. Will I go out now for a run? I feel guilty then, but balance is key. And I like to go into my ma's and sit down and drink 15 cups of tea and just enjoy those simple little things in life, and to be able to walk up to your cousins and have a chat and, you know, just normal things, like very, very normal things. And it's,
so when you're sitting there eating all this chocolate and doing nothing in your pajamas, how often have you watched the Olympic final?
I haven't watched it once. I've seen clips of it. Yeah, I'm planning, like, in my head, I'm like, around Christmas time, we're all going to sit down together and we're going to watch it and have a whinge fest. But no, I haven't watched it once. But I will, I definitely will watch it over the Christmas. I imagine me sitting down with the family and watching it and all together, like, and I don't want to watch it alone. Like, I want to be with my family. And
when I came home from winning or riding the big races or festivals, like, I wanted to sit down and watch it and relive it again. I wanted it straight back in my head, but obviously that memory is just there for you. I'm sorry if you're getting boxed, of course it is, but it's just there for you. I find that incredible. That will be a treat for your Christmas time. Santa Claus is coming to you.
Yeah, you know, but that's it. I visualize it all the time. I still, like, if I want to get that feeling back of the way I felt when I was walking to the ring, I can get it back, because I remember it like it was only yesterday. And I swear to God, I have a head like a sieve. Everything falls through, literally. Like, but I remember that. I remember the Olympic Games. I remember the feeling I had. Just reliving it in my own head is just amazing. Like, and I think when I do watch it back, it would be amazing. Like, it's just going to be fantastic. And to hear it, because I've seen clips of it, obviously, and I've seen clips of the people on Portland Row after the first round when I lost the first round, you know, and you're watching them all and they're like that with their hands to their face and they're thinking that's the end of it. Like, and it's brilliant then to watch them, like, just at the end of it, just, you know, how it's torn around and everything, just to see those moments, like, never mind the fight, like, just to watch the people. I just want to see the people's reaction of the fight, you know. That's what I love, like, it's just amazing.
So Kelly, when do we see you fighting again? Because, like you're saying, it's still fresh in your memory, it's still fresh in ours as well, and we want more now.
Well, I mean, if Mandy doesn't get the dinner on at 6 o'clock, you could see me fighting fairly soon. hopefully, the Worlds are in March, so I'm sure there'll be something before March, probably a little multinations or something like that. But the Worlds are in March and the Europeans are in June or July. But that's just preparation for the big one. So, like, whatever will be. I'm not expecting big things. I never do expect big things. I didn't expect it that in the Olympics. I was just going with the flow, and whatever happened. It just so be that it happened good. So, yeah, so hopefully March.
And how is your appetite to go back into camp, to go back into training? Are you looking forward to it, or are you hoping it just stays that little bit far away?
No, we've been back, Ruby, already. I've been in Sheffield at a sparring camp there, because the Worlds were only cancelled and we were out in before the Worlds were cancelled, we were out in Sheffield training because I was going to go to the World Championships, and we were out in Sheffield training, and we had a 5-day sparring camp. And on the last day we were in the airport, we got told that the Worlds were cancelled. But we're going to go to Italy now next week for another training camp slash kind of test matches. The only good thing about that is that I won't have to make weight. You know yourself, Ruby, making weight is just disgusting. Like,
what when you say making weight, I knew how much I could lose in a short space of time to make weight. So 2 days before a fight, what would you be looking at taking off?
Well, 2 days before a fight, 1.5. That's I'd get 1.5 the weight down.
1.5 kilos is over 3.5 pounds. That's when you're fit and lean, that's a fair bit to lose.
It is, yeah. And that's the thing, like, I don't go, my weight wouldn't go, like, I'd go to about 65 kilos and I'd come down, but when I'm coming up to competition, all those biscuits and cakes that I'm talking about, they all get nipped in the bud, like, well, I'll have a little bit of chocolate once a day, because, I mean, a bit of chocolate a day keeps the doctor away. So I'd still have that, but, yeah, the making weight part of it is the bit that I don't miss. But when we're in Italy, I won't have to, for the test matches, I won't have to make weight. Or even if I do, I'll probably move up to 63 and just say whatever.
And what about Paris? So that's going to start forming part of the conversation pretty quickly, because we had the delay with the last Olympics. Like, is that in your mind now all the time?
It's not actually. It's not. No. Like, Tokyo wasn't in my head all of the time either, to be very honest with you. What would be in my head is the qualifiers before Paris. They'd be in my head, and then before Paris. So the qualifiers would be in my head, and if I qualify, then we'll allow Paris to get in. You know, no point in jumping the gun too soon, really. Small baby steps. You have to crawl before you walk.
And how do you feel?
We're back to the crawling stage again.
How do you feel then about being, there have been a target on your back, Eddie, because you are the champion now?
Yeah, like, it's a privilege to be in that position, but I also know that there is girls coming through. We have the Russians coming. There's a new Russian on the scene, that Brazilian girl. But first of all, you have to look at the European girls, because they're the ones who you need to beat to get out of, to get qualify. So we have, like, the Russian, the Swedish girl. There's loads of new girls coming up, and these are all hungry and they're all young, so they're all recovering a lot faster than I am. So I'm just looking at the moment, I'm just scoping out the competition and trying to work on what I can do with the little 1%ers to get a little bit better.
They might be younger, but they won't have your experience, Kelly.
That's it. Yeah, that exactly, Ruby. You hit the nail on the head there. They won't have experience, and experience accounts for a lot, doesn't it, Ruby?
Oh, a huge amount. I mean, so much of all sport is between your ears, and the experience you have, I'd hate to be taking you on.
we interview people that are have commercial ties all the time, but this one that you have with Spar in the community, when I think of perfect matches, it does feel like this is the perfect match.
Yeah, so obviously, like, everyone knows, I'm a great ambassador for my community, and Spar have over 400 shops in the local communities around Ireland, and they're run by independent retailers, most of which are families, and that means a lot to me, families. And coming on board at the right time as well, when they're going to release the Spar Christmas Community Fund. They have 10K to give away. It'll be broken down into 1K per coach, per mentor. And I mean, like, when I was growing up, if I could have nominated my coach or my mentor when I was coming up through the ranks to win €1,000 for his club, it would have been fantastic. So anybody out there who does want to enter, all you have to do is log on to spar.ie to be in with a chance to win €1,000 for your coach or your mentor. Remember, if you're not in, you cannot win. So get on it today.
Would you be standing under the tree handing them out?
I'd be under the tree at the 5 lamps at Spar.
Kelly Harrington, that is the perfect way to end this interview. Thank you so much, and we wish you best of luck with everything that's coming up over the next while.
Thanks, Kelly.
See you later.
She's great fun, Ruby.
Oh, she's a breath of fresh air, Marie, and she deserves every sponsorship contract she can get, because
national treasure.
Yeah, She is one of a kind, so yeah. She is. Moving back to our previous topic, which was racism in cricket, I read a most wonderful book a couple of weeks back written by Michael Holding, the West Indian cricketer, Why We Kneel and How We Rise. And I would recommend it to anybody for an education on racism and how we have all been educated to be racist. It was fascinating.
Well, you might pass it on to me for Christmas then, Ruby.
I might.
Right, there is one other thing we need to touch on before we finish up. The Republic of Ireland need a victory to get their under-21 European Championship qualifying campaign back on track, and they faced Sweden tonight in Tallaght Stadium. That kicks off at 7 o'clock and it is on RTE television. An hour out of time, Ruby.
See you, Marie. Tara Kumar's up next.
With Green Farms on-the-go chicken bites, 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected Tesco's nationwide.